Welcome to the Long Come Norwich podcast, where we converse on the chaotic, crushing chasm between quality Canaries football and the crap that this current coaching cabal is creating this Christmas. Connor, Maddie and John are here for a festive jibber-jabber. Connor, it felt like a very public turning on Saturday night, and you'd be a monster if you didn't feel for Dean Smith in that moment, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's quite hard to put yourself in that position, isn't it? To be someone stood in front of whatever the crowd was, because we don't officially know, but thousands and thousands of people, not just chanting for you to be sacked, by the way, but also just completely rejecting your work and your methods and what you do. I mean, in many ways, actually, the second chant about the style of football was worse than the one calling for him to be sacked, in my opinion, because that was just a complete rejection from everyone or the people who engaged in that. I'm sure it wasn't everyone on the style of play and on what he was trying to do. So yeah, there is a very human nature to all of this where you do feel sorry for him as a human being. And that, for me, and I'm sure we'll get into the post-match stuff, is what makes the post-match comments a little bit more, I don't want to say understandable, but I think there was an emotive, quite human response to that. Because if you're putting someone in a situation where they're going to get stick like that, I think you have to expect them to kind of fight their corner a little bit and come out swinging to an extent. Did it help? Probably not. Did it pour petrol on it? Absolutely. But I can understand why he responded in the way that he responded. But particularly for someone who has to sort of listen to Dean Smith speak every week and see Dean Smith in the flesh, he's a perfectly pleasant human being. But that's football, isn't it? That's the nature of it. And he will have known that when he got into it. So, yeah, you would have to be a monster not to feel for him. It's quite sad, to be honest, that he's got to this point. And I feel that actually the longer that it prolongs now, the nastier and probably more personal that it's going to get over the weeks to come.
Well, if we pick up on a couple of things particularly that stood out for me in that post-match, well, yeah, like, just focus on a couple of them because there was so much there. But firstly, the idea that, oh no, the fans, there's kind of some pre-built narrative. There's no kind of fan hub elite panel that sends out these are the tweets and the Insta posts and reactions that everyone needs to follow.
You're just not on the WhatsApp group, mate.
that wouldn't surprise me if I found that. This is how I found out that, oh no, there is there is, we've all got a script and you're not invited. But I can't understand why he's clinging to that. And what concerns me about him clinging to this whole narrative thing is that is actually being spoken about in the corridors of Colney. That it isn't just him. You know, the club and the people off the pitch in those positions seem to also think that it's us versus them. And the whole fact that he's looking forward to the next game being away from home. You know, you said, Connor, it's sad that it's got to that point. I personally cannot remember, whilst I'm sure Worthington might have felt it and Rhoda might have felt it at times, I can't remember a manager, to be honest, even of another club, ever publicly saying as easy as that, well, yeah, good job, we're away, aren't we? Get away from our fans. I mean, Maddie, that feels like something that is completely irreparable.
It's what you said about that being the conversation in Colney. I think that's the really key point for me. The fact that he can come out there and say that, and so many people said what you said, which is any other manager of a football club would have been gone by now. You can't say these things about the fans of the club and stay in your post. But it speaks to me that is just the culture that's ingrained in the club now, that it is this us versus them siege mentality. And initially, for a while in that first Premier League season, that worked because we were part of the us and not the them. But now they've turned and we're part of the noise that they've been desperately trying to ignore for all these years. And I just think it's really sad that the manager can come out and say this and none of the higher-ups have a problem with it, that that's just part of the culture and that we are seen as the enemy. We're just seen as paying customers and not fans anymore. And that's, to me, is the antithesis of what Norwich is about. So it's horrible. And it's sad from a fan's perspective, but it's also just, it's not a good business model. I mean, season ticket renewals are in less than a month's time. They released the attendance for Saturday very, very quietly. Are they not scared? Are they not worried that they're alienating the fans this close to season ticket renewal time and there's no panicking in Colney or Carrow Road whatsoever? The whole thing just reeks to me of something deeper going on at the top.
They must be concerned because I've got no vested interest in keeping tabs on how season ticket renewals are going to go. Yet I just, as a casual observer of conversations amongst friendship groups on the few WhatsApp groups I am invited to, John, I can't, and I'm not allowed in your elite ones, but the sheer number of people who previously have had season tickets for several years who are saying, and likewise, you see other things on social media as well, I'd rather be a few hundred quid better off next year than sit through this. Because it does go further than, it's the standard of football, but it's also if to your point, Maddie, and I don't think I'd seen it articulated that well until you just said that, it's almost the fact that he's the customer facing representative of the off the pitch, right? He's almost like on the tills of the Norwich shop. And if he is allowed to tell customers to fuck off when he gives them their change, you see what I mean? If the deputy store manager or whatever doesn't come over and says, we'd really rather you didn't say that to customers when they leave the shop, then we get the impression that, all right, so like you say, it's fine then, right? That's fine for him to just be fed up with us and make out like we're the problem. And John, the point I wanted to bring you in on is the thing that really concerned me and I think could do damage beyond, you know, in terms of this season, beyond his tenure, which seems like it's only a matter of days, hopefully hours now, is he was saying, yeah, this is the conversation I've just had in there, meaning in there with the players, you know, that actually we need to get a couple of goals ahead to get them off your back. That is really bad. What we don't want is him intimating to the players that we've got any kind of problem with them, because we don't. Our issue is not with them. As Chris Gorham brilliantly said during that interview, we've seen those players win two titles, a lot of them. We know the ability of the players. The players weren't being booed. The players weren't having people... And that has happened at Cat Row before. We've had individual players picked on quite clearly with specific boos and specific catcalls. That hasn't happened this season. It has been a deeper malaise as yet another move goes nowhere.
I think you could potentially perceive that there were boos and catcalls at certain times with certain individuals looking to take certain actions, i.e. like, let's go back to Angus Gunn because there's no option ahead of us because the midfield isn't moving. Let's, you know, ping it between Gibson and Hanley because actually there's nothing else. There's no one showing in the midfield, you know, and then they'd have to ping it long or whatever. But for me, and Connor's talked about it a little bit, that was a rejection of the football. And then it was vociferous in the way in which it came through from the Barkley and the Snake Pit that people are just deeply unhappy with the style of football that's being played. So I think the players are probably canny enough and most of them have been around long enough to know that it isn't them. And, you know, this is the manager and it's very clearly the manager, all of them, you know, and no matter how much they try and tell you that they will try and block out crowd noise, all of them will be, you know, absolutely on board with that fact.
Well, but John Dahl Thomason brought it up in his press conference as well.
And I think going back to the way in which fans are talked to and the way in which fans maybe have felt disrespected and disconnected and disengaged, I think the club know it. And I think the club know it because I've certainly seen, you know, as someone who's been part of a long come Norwich over the last 2-3 weeks, the dials just started to shift a little bit and they've started to realise that they need fans on board. So fan groups were invited up to Colney this week to watch first team training. You know, and that was facilitated by, you know, senior people within the football club and was generally well received. Fan groups have been invited into Carrow Road and had general discussions around, you know, what's going on at the moment. There's been atmosphere meetings. I think the club get it, but I think the club aren't putting that out publicly. It's almost a change of strategy by stealth because they realise that they need a few more people on board with what they're trying to achieve. The difficulty is that it has gone so far the other way that I don't know how you... Well, I think you can probably get the fan groups and some of the supporters back on board, but only if the football was still kind of average rather than just abject. And it was abject on Saturday. I mean, it was genuinely dreadful. And I know we'll get into the performance properly, or maybe we won't because we're all, you know, we're just sick of talking about it. But Dean Smith coming out and kind of suggesting, well, possession stats were better and, you know, we had 19 shots, 8 of which were blocked, by the way, and probably the, you know, the remaining 11 weren't exactly in, you know, kind of dribbled places. Yeah, exactly. They were garbage and you know, not necessarily like kind of high yield chances. So him coming out with that kind of nonsense when everyone can see that what was served up on the pitch was pitiful for the first half and the second half a bit better, but Blackburn were kind of happy to keep us at arm's length and just protect what they had. everyone can see through this now. Anyone, you know, kind of who has any kind of contextual relationship with the football club knows that this only goes one way, and it's just a matter of when and not if. And I'm really surprised that the club can't see that, because the club look at social media, the club speak to people, the club speak internally to people who work there, who are fans of the football club. They will be gauging that, you know, what the temperature is at the moment. And I don't know, maybe they have just become masters of ignoring the noise, because it just beggars belief that we have either not had the Stuart Webber coming out and publicly defending him, that kind of dreaded vote of no confidence, or a corner flag moment yet. Now would have been the perfect opportunity to do it, because they had 9 days to prepare before Luton. And, you know, kind of the longer and longer it goes on, the more likely it is that he stays. But yeah, it's a worry.
My question, Connor, on him staying is, we know they try and be data led. We know they try and, you know, use analytics. I'd be fascinated what you think the argument Dean Smith could make. Now, I know there's an obvious one in the shape of the table. And, you know, I don't know if Norwich have ever been in a clearer cup half full, cup half empty position in their 100 odd years of existence, in that we are in the playoffs. We are 2 results and some other help away from being in the top 2. But we're closer to the bottom 3. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can really easily choose which way you read that. And yes, of course, we'd rather be only, you know, 4 or 5 off the top than down the bottom. But I can't believe that Stuart Webber, with all of his expertise in football, I can't believe he is buying the same bullshit that Smith is trying to get away with you lads in the post-match interviews around second most shots in the league, third most, because Stuart Webber will just go, I watched the game, mate. Like, we never looked like scoring.
Yeah. And that's the thing with data, right? Like, for as much as you can look at the numbers and crunch the numbers or even twist the numbers at points, everyone's got 2 eyes and everyone sees it. So you have to connect the two. You can't, for as much as you can't just go by an eye test, you can't just go by a data test either. You have to combine the two and meet somewhere in the middle. And the shots statistic I find absolutely laughable, if I'm honest, because it's so out of context, it's untrue. Yeah. And he knows it is, because if you take 40 shots from 40 yards, well, you've still had 40 shots, but actually you dig a bit deeper into it and it'll tell you the shots aren't from good areas. Yeah. And they aren't of a good quality. So again, it's just completely meaningless. Possession and another one, it's this age old thing, isn't it? You can have the ball, but it's about what you do with it, fine. But also you have to recognise, particularly on Saturday, a lot of it was game state because Blackburn scored early. And then it was about them letting Norwich have the ball and pressing them really well. And they were comfortable doing that in the same way that Norwich gave Swansea possession the week before. So I find this really sort of, oh, we dominated the game against Blackburn, but we didn't against Swansea, or we did in a different way against Swansea. Quite bizarre, because actually Blackburn kind of did what Norwich did at Swansea, but did it better. So you can twist it. And in terms of your question, and worth saying, I don't think there will be a change at this stage. It's certainly not what you get a sense of things. It's the sense that I get at this moment in time for whatever reason. I think the league table is a big part of that. They've not been out of the top 6 for a while. I think that's probably another factor. Again, rightly or wrongly, but there is this sense, and I think if you've been to a Norwich game or you've watched Norwich regularly, that actually you find yourself looking behind you an awful lot. And I think whenever you start, unless you're at the top of the league, obviously, unless you start doing that, you're in trouble. And particularly the nature of the Championship is, if this continues, Norwich might be in 5th now, but they're not going to be in a month's time or in a couple of weeks. And so all of this I find very bizarre, because there's an odd sense of loyalty and of putting eggs in baskets that maybe the last 13 months haven't really warranted. And you can understand it a bit more if it's Daniel Farker, say, because there's a little bit of credit in the bank. If we're brutally honest, there's no credit in the bank here. Norwich are in the top 6 because of a running form that was fueled largely by Josh Sargent scoring goals. Beyond that, it's been underperformance for a lot of this season. And even during that winning run, I think a lot of us were acknowledging that. So, yeah. No, I don't get it. I don't understand it. I think Middlesbrough was probably the time where a lot of people looked at it and thought it should be now.
Yeah.
And I think Saturday was probably the realization that it needed to be now. And yet I don't get the sense that we're there yet. And that I feel is completely baffling. And ultimately the longer it goes on, because it will get to that stage where it happens, and John said it, and he's quite right. When a manager gets to this stage, there is no way back. It's kind of the horse trading in between it kind of happening. But what you will see is actually the deflection and the criticism gets turned to other people inside the club. And I think when that starts to happen, attendances dwindle and season ticket renewals, as Maddie mentioned, being on the horizon as well, that is a real kind of fatal mix. And I think eventually that will force them into a decision. But in terms of pure fixtures and pure calendar, because of how condensed the next month is, this was the week to do it. Yeah. And I don't feel that it's coming. And just my final point, we're going to be in a very bizarre situation where on Friday, Dean Smith, as things stand, is going to sit down for a press conference, having to answer questions about last Saturday with absolutely no word said by anyone else in between, whether it's a vote of confidence, whether it's a decision being made. That to me feels utterly bizarre and to be honest, quite unsustainable.
Well, also, nothing said by anyone else about almost anything else. You know, nothing from the players. They didn't do their usual, sorry, we didn't get the result. You know, thanks for support. Like, there's usually a smattering of that and some like post-match pictures of themselves looking handsome. The club haven't done any of their community kind of stuff. There's been one social post from the club literally in... Since Saturday night's result. And then I think there was even something about the Duncan Forbes placard that was put up by the signs company that did it, but that wasn't reposted or kind of shared or anything by the Canaries official Twitter that I saw. So it does, you know, and that is abnormal. They are usually pretty prolific. So it's especially at this time of year. So, why are they not pushing? You know, they're not saying we've got offers on in our club shop. We've, you know, buy a shirt for Christmas. You know, this is a key, you know, e-commerce and retail time of year. Yet we're not seeing the normal kind of messaging in the run up to Christmas we would typically see from the club around trying to sell, you know, cups with O'Neill Hernandez's head on or whatever. Like that's typically what you see this time of year. And it's silent because they know that every single thing they put out there is going to be meted with corner flag, please admin. So Maddie, I'm going to give you the task of picking our new manager. I think all four of us on the call know that there's going to be a change. I've had a look at the runners and riders, and to me it seems very clear that the top three candidates are O'Neill, Wilder and Knutsen. Which of those three are we going to have?
Where have you pulled those from?
Well, what
basically,
the fuck?
I looked at a list of all
O'Neill,
of the...
O'Neill, what?
I looked at a list of all of the available candidates, all the managers who are out of work, and I think of those that would be willing to come to a championship team, they're the three that I think would be the shortest odds, based on the fact that they're the shortest odds to get another job soonest of Jesus. The ones that would come.
Knutsen's in a job at the moment, though, isn't he?
Did you say O'Neill? Which O'Neill is it?
Gary.
Of course. I thought you meant. I've got Martin on my brain.
Do you want to plug your interview, Connor, with Martin O'Neill now?
Well, no more than he wants to plug his books.
No, I will plug it. I really enjoyed that. That was fantastic and some really nice memory stuff in there. And I thought it was really nice that, you know, people like Darren Eady and others who were kind of referenced were able to say, you know, kind of boost that for you. And it clearly seemed to give them a lift to be back in the spotlight. It was a lovely piece of work. But enough of that, Colin.
For anyone who hasn't listened to it, though, and if you are going to go and listen to it, and I do recommend it, just as a little game that you can play as you go along, just count how many times Martin O'Neill says, really terrific. Because he really, really likes saying really terrific.
Fantastic. So, Maddie, you don't think it's O'Neill, Wilder or Knutsen then?
So, Gary O'Neill, who's still in a job with Premier League Bournemouth, and who got the vote of confidence after being caretaker manager. And
I've just taken the odds off the internet, Maddie.
That's fine.
I'm taking the odds off the internet, Maddie.
I say this with love, Tom, but that's nonsense. That's a no-go. Why would he want to change even the slimmest odds of Premier League survival for whatever the fuck is going on at Norwich at the moment? You just wouldn't. You wouldn't. And we don't even so. Even if you would, even if we could tempt you saying, oh, there you go, this is your rebuild project, we haven't got the money to tempt anyone at the moment. We haven't got the money to pay Dean Smith off, let alone bring in any good manager. So Chris Wilder... We were having this discussion in the Along Come Norwich WhatsApp that you're not part of, Parsley, the other day. And I just think there's too much bad blood there with supporters. And I know that there is a section of the fan base who'd say, oh, get over that because he'll just be great. But he did so much to try and antagonise Norwich, and there is still that weird rivalry between Sheffield United that we don't seem to care about, but they seem to think it's the biggest game of their season. Sorry, Sheffield United fans who might catch on to this. But and then there's Knutson, who's still in a job and who seems perfectly content in his job, and again, probably couldn't be tempted to come over here where we've got no long-term direction and no signs of a project. I'm thinking about the other names I've seen thrown out there. Someone mentioned Scott Parker the other day, which, again, I think would be a strange brand of football to get used to, but he does have the experience of getting promoted and then some time in the Premier League. Obviously, there's your mate Russ, who people are interested in and gravitating towards, but I'm not sure if he'd take it. I mean, you know better than I, but I don't know if he'd want to leave Swansea again for the absolute dump truck mess that is Norwich. It's just, we're just not an attractive prospect. And we keep having this conversation of who comes in if he goes. And I genuinely don't know. It almost seems that the onus, you know, people say, oh, you can't call for him to be sacked unless you have a replacement. Why not? That's exactly what we did with Daniel Farker. We got him sacked and then they picked up a manager who got sacked the day afterwards. There is no long-term plan. There's not even the illusion of a long-term plan. We have no idea what's going on because the club have no idea what's going on. So we can throw out these names as much as we like, but I don't think it would be anybody that we would mention. I think after what's gone on with Dean Smith, they would go slightly more left field, and they're just going to have the difficulty of trying to get someone to come in the first place.
Well, I mean, the odds I was basing it on was the next Bournemouth manager before O'Neill was made permanent, because that was the closest thing I could find in terms of who's available, and also...
So you were pulling it out of your arse, basically.
Yeah, of course I was. Which is a nice preview to the quiz coming later. John, speaking of pulling things out of your arse, which name is it going to be? And do you think maybe the fact that it is so difficult to come up with one is why it hasn't happened this week? Maybe there were a couple of, you know, sneaky phone calls that took place, and the answer was, nah, mate, you're in a mess, I'm not coming. And so that's why he hasn't moved, because there isn't an easy answer to who to bring in.
I mean, I think it's tricky, right? So Stuart Webber picks Daniel Farker. You know, before that, what's his name? Wagner at Huddersfield. You know, he had a track record of picking left field, successful, good coaches. And I think he had taken, and I'd say this as Webber had taken Norwich far enough and thought, Daniel Farker's style of football isn't going to be fit for purpose in the Premier League, and we need to do something different to achieve what ultimately he wanted to achieve, which was a legacy of Norwich in the Premier League, brand new city stand, stadium upgraded, you know, kind of beyond belief. Colney, you know, with ridiculous facilities, which would see us, you know, kind of as a real beacon of a place that players want to come and play and train. And then Webber would then just swan off into the sunset, and that would be his legacy. And thank you very much. I'm brilliant. You know, I'm either going to go and work in Formula One or be sporting director for Chelsea or, you know, whatever. That plan hasn't worked out because of the head coach that he subsequently picked, who was Dean Smith. And I think he picked Dean Smith, and I think all the noises out of the football club suggest this as well, because he wanted Norwich to start acting a bit more like a Premier League football club. And I mean that as a conventional Premier League football club. And I think this experiment has proved that that isn't going to work. And maybe we do need to go back to something which is a bit more left field, which identifies a bit more with Norwich City. And I look at someone like Brentford with Thomas Frank, and they've been really successful. You know, their success is undeniable. Their financial model, whilst they, you know, their owners are slightly, well, a lot better off than ours, they haven't spent oodles and oodles of cash to achieve what they're achieving. So I personally think that Webber still has that Rolodex of coaches and managers out there that he thinks might be useful for us. And it's whether he still wants to continue along the track of, right, we need to behave like a normal Premier League football club that finishes between 12th and 17th every year, or whether people at the football club think, no, we need to go back to doing what Norwich City do really well. And I still think Knutson could be a really good appointment. I think the lure of potential Premier League football and it not being that far away might be enough for him. And look, I think this is, a lot of people suggest that the malaise and the difficulties at the football club are wider than Dean Smith. And I agree with that. But the culture and the tone is so often set by the head coach, and it definitely was under Daniel Farker. And if we got it right, I'm not saying that everything would be fixed and everything would be wonderful, but it could be a damn sight better than it is now. And you're not telling me, right, that this is the players, because it isn't. We've seen these players perform. We've seen these players perform individually. We've seen them perform collectively. A decent, well, I still think Dean Smith might be a decent coach, you know, kind of in with a bit of time and a rest. But a really motivated, decent coach coming into Norwich City Football Club at the moment, I really think could have that kind of Alex Neil, you know, kind of turn around, the trajectory completely changes. And look, I think autos are beyond us now. But if we go into the top six at the end of the season with any kind of momentum, then that would be brilliant. If it carries on as is, and the excuse, and it is an excuse from the football club, is something along the lines of, oh, well, we're fifth, just don't buy it. And there's two reasons behind that. Yes, we're fifth, but we've got 35 points over 23 games. So we're at the halfway stage right now. You aggregate that over 46 games, we end up on 70 points. There are very few championship campaigns where you will end up in the top six off the back of that. So that is a worry. Teams will get their act together and teams will overtake us. But also, our stated ambition was automatics. You know, Smith was clear about that. Everyone at the football club was clear about that. We're, I don't know what it is, 11 points off Burnley. We're 9 off Sheffield United. We're so far off it. It's ridiculous. So look, I think it can be turned around. I think a head coach like Knutson, or a left field pick, as Maddie said, maybe someone, you know, who's up and coming from not necessarily a glamorous league, is probably what fits and chimes with Norwich fans. And we could all get behind now.
I don't agree at all that we're miles off auto and that automatic promotion.
We're 9 points, mate.
Yeah, and there's what, 23 games left? Yeah. I mean, that's nothing at all. Nothing at all to make up. If you've got a new manager with some momentum, it's been done hundreds of times. You know, and you know, there are probably people behind us who there's probably a team behind us that may well end up in the autos and then come out again between now and the end of the season. Having seen Burnley, they do look like they've got their shit together with a good manager and a good style of football, and they know where they're at. And injuries aside, you'd expect them to be one or two. Sheffield United, I'm not sure that they are a runaway candidate to be just gather so much momentum. There's a couple of other teams that may well be in and around it, but I think the fact that, again, we don't think it's happening now, but if you did. World Cup was the time to do it. We all said that. But then even now would be the time to do it before Luton. You've still got half the season to generate points, momentum. And even if you end up finishing in the playoffs, but you finish in the playoffs after winning more than you've lost and playing some football that the crowd enjoys and momentum, and you then miss the playoffs, you end the season. If we fail in the playoffs under Smith, it will be toxic. And I mean, I cannot believe he'll still be there then. But if we were to fail in the playoffs under Smith, it would be an awful kind of validation of how terrible everything has been. If we fail in the playoffs under a manager who has swept everyone up along with him, whilst that would be really disappointing, and we've got exactly the same financial headaches and problems of staying down that we would have if we were down under Smith, I just think that the season ticket renewals and the kind of momentum going into the second championship campaign, and kind of where we have to use the parachute payment as a kind of life support rather than to reinvest, I almost feel like the club are going to need the fans to have that momentum, because we're going to have to cut our cloth in terms of playing staff. So yeah, I think that I get what you're saying. It feels at the moment like we are adrift, but we're really not. Three, four games is not much over 23.
Well, okay. So say for example,
we play them both again as well. Remember,
but say for example, for second, you need like minimum 85 points. I think that's what Norwich went up with under Lambert. That's 50 more points. We're going to have to go at better than 2 points per game to do that. I don't think we've got that in us.
I think we might.
I think on a fair run, we could go 2 points a game and we could go close. I just don't think we've got
enough
momentum. And especially because we're all accepting of the fact now that this is probably going to limp on for another 3 or 4 games. And I saw Adam Brandon post on Twitter a while ago about, I think it's Burnley at home is what, kind of towards the end of January. And it'll be a interesting parallel with when Gary Doherty kind of rugby tackled the guy Burnley at home for Worthington to get the sack. And we lost 3-1, 4-1, something like that. I think, you know, we might even be looking at it being strung along for that long.
Well, see, the difference I think we've got in this season is if you look at last season, so last season you needed 75 points to finish sixth, but I think you also needed 88 to come second. Although actually, you know, having said that, third was 82. But my point is the Fulham and Bournemouth were real standout candidates last year. Now with this year, I don't think the points tally will be as high to finish in the top six, and I don't think it will be as high to finish second, because I just don't think that the quality is very well distributed at all in the kind of top 12 teams, which is why you've got this. I mean, I can't remember the championship being so crazy that you know, in three or four results time, we could be bottom and we're currently fifth. I mean, even by the championship standards, that is a very sandwiched together league at the moment. I really don't think there is great quality in there. So that's what makes me so frustrated that everything is pointing towards making that change. Connor, have you got are there any names that you've had mentioned to you or that you think could potentially be a one to watch if they ever did bring out the corner flag graphic?
No, because I don't ever really, I've never really had the sense this season that it's something that has even entered their minds. Where, of course, whether that's changed since the weekend or not is probably up to debate. I think it's probably, you get senses a lot when you do what I do, and people maybe hinting at stuff rather than saying it outright, and I think the hints are that there's probably been a few more chips than there have been in recent weeks in terms of like dents in that thinking, but I don't think it's ever really been up for debate. So no on kind of that regard, and it was even suggested to me at one point this was sort of during the first wobble in September, October, maybe not that time, but whenever the first wobble was, that it wouldn't be under consideration this season. So again, whether that has changed or not in that time is different. I think obviously they probably weren't anticipating Carroll Road to turn in the manner that it has. And with all of the context that we've put into the opening half an hour of this pod, I think it will have to change, and it will have to change. In terms of names, it's been quite interesting listening to you guys speak there. Scott Parker is a really interesting one, because I've seen, and this is from someone, by the way, who absolutely adores Scott Parker and loved him as a footballer. And basically, I based my game on what I tried to do as a footballer off Scott Parker. So for me to criticise him, I feel a little bit like I'm going against myself. But you just have to speak to any Bournemouth fan from their last couple of last promotion season, they weren't too pleased with him and his style of play. Fulham likewise, when they went up, and as soon as he went up to the Premier League, he was moaning about a lack of resource. So I don't particularly see that one as viable. I think Russ is a really interesting one, because I watched what he's trying to do at Swansea. I've watched Swansea on a few occasions this year for research purposes, and I actually think it's the age old thing. I think if he had a better quality of player, I think the style of football that he's trying to implement there would be really attractive and really fun to watch. And I like some of the ideas, but that's just me in terms of what I like to watch when I watch football. I also understand why people would be against that, and why maybe the connection isn't necessarily a good thing to some people. So I don't think there is a perfect candidate. There never is in these things. I think Norwich would go abroad this time. I do. Again, I just don't get the sense that it's something that is in their consciousness at the moment, and it should be. So, yeah,
well, but part of me wonders, Connor, if it might be a similar situation to that Leeds and then Brentford game, where what they saw on Saturday and what they experienced on Saturday means that they've made their decision, and then it comes out after the Luton game. So basically he's already gone. They are now getting their ducks in a row in terms of how the search is going to be conducted, and that will be done after Luton.
Yeah, quite possibly.
So maybe the decision has been done.
Quite possibly. And there was also a mechanical reason behind that in terms of the way that the football club operates is they had to convene a meeting of the board of directors. That's very difficult to get them all in the room at the same time. Obviously now that's probably even more difficult because they've got an American on the board who lives in America. So it's almost like trying to pass a law through parliament. You have to get it signed off by the monarch. That's kind of the way I would look at it.
So Stephen Fry in our case.
So I think that there is a possibility of that being the case. There was also the factor last time that they were courting someone who didn't end up wanting the job and had something else lined up. So that made it slightly more difficult from their perspective and was probably why they were maybe a bit more reactive in terms of the appointment that they made in the end. So all of this is, yeah, all of it is quite interesting because nobody really knows. And it just feels to me completely unsustainable to just think that you can go on like this because, okay, they're away on Boxing Day, but after that, they've got three home games back to back. And so just, what, are you just going to put Dean Smith back in front of the fans again? I don't really see how that works.
Connor, just roam back for me for a moment, right? So you've said when we appointed Dean Smith that we were actively courting someone who had someone else lined up. Is that the person that we all think it is, i.e. Frank Lampard? And is it, if that, okay, all right. I'm slightly more reassured then.
But I mean, if you just think about the post-Christmas bloat and hangover and how grumpy people might be, especially into the new year, starting dry January, and then they have to, and then effectively what is already a cross. If we're that unpleasant to him when there's Christmas spirit in the air, what are we going to be like on the first couple of games of January? I mean, it's going to be brutal. And the point is, it's really unpleasant. And I was there with my lad on Saturday, and he was not really that aware of the vitriol. He found the chant around them, as he said to his mother. They said that Dean Smith's football was excrement, which I thought was very funny. He's already at the age 7 knowing that you say different things at home than you do at football. But I did think it was funny that he didn't really pick up on that. But there is only a matter of time where it's going to get to throwing things at him, and because the fans get really angry. And what I also don't want to happen is I don't want them to then turn that attention to the director's box and start singing Dealey Sort It Out. And because, you know, you start to see some of that unpleasant misogynist, or the cook says, some of that awfulness starts to come out of our fan base when things are not going well, when we don't feel we're being listened to as a fan base.
That's exactly the thing as well. It's that idea that they're not being listened to and they're not being heard, and that makes people more angry. It makes frustration become quite mobbish, and that's dangerous, I think, for any football club, any organisation to entertain.
Well, they got a taste of that with Moxie, didn't they? When we basically felt that we weren't being listened to with regards to him being basically the wrong sort of person to be anywhere near our football club, and I think that really resonated with them. So yeah, I hope we are in a Brentford Leeds situation. I hope the content that's being created by us all this week around hoping for a change, come Monday night, it will be a case of there's been one. But I mean, even so, that, like to our points before, it feels like a wasted opportunity to start getting the applications in sooner. So let's do some guarantees for Luton then. Maddie, I want a guaranteed Boxing Day score and a guaranteed scorer for Norwich, please.
Well, I was going to say Norwich won't score against Luton. So I was going to say 2-0 to Luton with no Norwich scorer.
Yeah, you can guarantee a no Norwich scorer if you want.
No, I'll guarantee a Norwich own goal. And I think he will drop Ben Gibson and bring in Omobama Daly. And then Omobama Daly will get an unfortunate own goal. And everyone will go, ooh, what do we do now? Do we blame him? Do we have a problem with him? And it will just bring up all of these weird sentiments. So, yeah, 2-0 Luton, own goal, Omobama Daly. And then, I don't know, some other random Luton player to get it in the 80th minute and make us all depressed on a Boxing Day evening.
Okay, John, you love Luton. You think they're the best team to ever play football. So what are you going, 6-0?
I am. You know. I actually think we're going to win. I think Norwich are going to do a win, and I think we will limp on. And just for shits and giggles, I think that we will go out and score two early goals, because that's exactly what Dean Smith said we needed to do. So, and let's say that Sarge is going to score them both, and that we will come home with a 2-0 victory, which won't be outstanding in terms of performance, but it will be just enough to kind of keep Dean Smith's, not necessarily his head, but maybe just his eyes and his hair above water.
Well, I mean, if my suggested analogy is right, any victory won't be enough, because we won against Brentford, didn't we? And Fark still went. Go on, Connor.
What do you know then, Thomas?
Your informed guarantees, Connor.
Yeah, I think Norwich will win as well. And I would go down a similar line to John, actually. And to be honest, I think it's a game that Norwich might have won before the World Cup break. And I think it's a game that they might win after. Like, that's the thing, though, isn't it? Because that's kind of the narrative, that they win and they're inconsistent. And it's not really the away form that's been an issue. If you zoomed in on a bit more, it probably isn't automatic promotion form, but on a wider scale, it's not been as bad as the home form. So, yeah, I could see them winning. They don't tend to do very well at Kenilworth Road, though, do they? I think it's 2007 since they last won there. They didn't win there in the last title-winning campaign. I'm going to go for 2-1, though. I think Grant Hanley might score a header.
It's time for the Along Come Norwich quiz. It's a Christmas-themed Christmas World Cup edition, which doesn't really have that much to do with this year's World Cup, because John said he didn't know much about it. So I didn't think that was fair. Now,
I said that after you did the questions, mate.
I was trying to give you a bit of advantage in making out like I prepared it for you, but I guess that might set you up for more of a fall. So, Connor, you're going first. You're the only one who's paid to know stuff about football. So your minute to answer six...
Debatable, that.
Well, quite. I don't think it's debatable that you professionally you are employed. Like, I don't think we agree.
Well, no, that's true. I mean, probably more that I know stuff about football is debatable.
Okay, yeah.
The premise of your question is right. Yeah.
Thank you. Your minute to answer six questions that have got nothing to do with Norwich start now. Name one of the six Nottingham Forest players at the 2022 FIFA World Cup finals.
Oh, who plays for Forest this week?
Might want to use a pass here, Connor.
Yeah, pass. I'll pass that.
Name a player to win over 125 caps for Spain.
Xavi.
Correct. Name a player to win an England cap whilst with a Welsh club.
I can only think of Welsh players, so I'll pass that one. Okay. Come back to it.
Name one of the six Mexicans with over 930 all-time international goals.
Chicharito.
Yes. Which nation has finished a FIFA World Cup tournament in third place the most times?
The Netherlands?
That's time. Not correct, but that's your time. So...
Well, they were hard.
Yes,
they were hard, Thomas.
But Connor is a professional. just to go back, the six Nottingham Forest players you could have had: Brandon Aguilera, Cheick Coyote, Remo Ferreira, Nico Williams, Brennan Johnson, and Wayne Hennessy. So a big Welsh contingent.
Disappointed with the Welsh ones. Yeah, I'm disappointed with the Welsh ones.
You picked Xavi for players over 125 caps for Spain. You could have had Sergio Ramos and Casillas and Busquets and some others. John, do you know which players have won an England cap whilst with the Welsh club?
There's players, is there?
There's two, yeah.
Is it someone from like the most recent, like half decent Swansea team?
Yeah,
I've got one in my head.
Ish. Yeah, go on, Connor.
Now.
Ish.
But I don't know. Scott Sinclair, did he get one when he was at Swansea?
No. So it is Jonjo Shelvey with Swansea.
Ah, of course it is.
Oh, blimey.
Jay Boothroyd with Cardiff in 2010.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Those so just then, roll off the tip of the tongue, don't they? Obviously.
Yeah. You've got, you picked Little P in terms of Mexican, you could have Little Borghetti and some others. Germany have finished in third place four times. Brazil, France, Poland, and Sweden have finished in third place twice each. So whilst the Netherlands have failed a lot, they haven't even managed to then win the playoff.
Right. Okay.
then you didn't get to the final one, so never mind. So I think I make that 2, which is usually a par score.
It's a par score, mate.
No, okay. 2 is par.
Fine, yeah, yeah.
2 is par.
I'll take the hit.
And bear in mind, that's the pre-internet adjusted score. So that's us finding out that I've got the answers wrong. So that score could rise at any point. Every answer is basically with an asterisk. Right, Maddie, you've got 2 to try and draw level, or 3 to take the lead. And your minute starts now. Name one of the players to captain England more often than Harry Kane.
Wayne Rooney.
Incorrect. Name one of the Argentinians besides Messi to get 100 Argentinian caps.
God. Sergio Aguero, has he done it?
He has done it, 101. Name a Japanese player to have made more than 30 Premier League appearances.
Not a clue, pass.
Okay, who were the last six... Well, name one of the last 6 players to score for England against Wales before this World Cup.
Against Wales. I'm trying to think who did it in the Euros. Let's go for Harry Kane's an easy answer.
Incorrect. Name a non-British club to have supplied an English player for a World Cup finals. All time.
English player for the World Cup finals?
For non-British club.
Oh, God. Non-British club. Barcelona.
No. Name one of the 5 Newcastle sports washing United players that are at the World
Cup.
See, mate, I know nothing.
Well, you got,
I'm proud of it.
You got one, and you got that one very quickly.
Yes.
Right, okay. So, players to captain England more than Harry Kane? John Connor?
John Terry?
No, you could have had...
Brian Robson?
Yes, Brian Robson. You could have had Billy Wright, Bobby Moore, and Beckham as well. You got Aguero with the 101 caps. Japanese players...
Mascherano?
Yeah, you could have had Mascherano. He's the top one, 147. Then Zanetti, Di Maria, etc. Then you've got Yoshida, Okazaki, Inamoto, Minamino. They're all people you could have gone for the Japanese player. Connor Cody, Danny Ings, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, Jamie Vardy, Daniel Sturridge and Ashley Young were the last 6 people to score against Wales. You could have had AC Milan, Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund, FC Köln, Internazionale Milan, Marseille and Real Madrid. For the players to
so basically everyone else,
yeah, all the other famous clubs, I don't think what we didn't get through the Newcastle sports washing United players at the World Cup. So John, you've got 1 to not come last. Time starts now. Name one of the 3 teams that got a red card in the World Cup.
Holland.
Incorrect. Name a Brazilian to have made more than. Oh, no, I've done that wrong. No, I'm right. Name a Brazilian to have made more than 200 Premier League appearances.
Pass.
Besides from Ronaldo, name one of the Portuguese to have over 100 caps.
Matinho?
Yep. Name an African team that England have scored against under Gareth Southgate.
Senegal.
Incorrect. Rashford,
literally happened this World Cup, mate.
Yeah, but this is before the World Cup. I forgot to add that bit in.
You did say that.
I can't help that. I'll give you a point. Other than Rashford this year, name a Man United player who has scored for at a World Cup for England. This is your easiest one.
Wayne Rooney.
Correct. And name one of the Netherlands managers to lose a World Cup final. Time.
Oh.
That was
a
really
breaker time. Then.
That was a really hard one. So
what was the answer? Cruyff?
No, you could have had Rinus Michels, Ernst Happel, or Bert van Marwijk.
Of course.
He was the one that lost to Spain in 2010.
Of course.
Okay, so it's a 2-way tiebreak, although Maddie, you can join in as well. One of the questions was about Brazilians making over 200 league appearances. I would like you to give me an exact number, please. How many Premier League appearances has Roberto Firmino made in the Premier League appearances, Premier League? So, Maddie, coming to you first. Roberto Firmino, it's over 200.
Why?
Because I believe that you know the answer. It's over 200.
Mate,
because that was the question.
All right,
how many Premier League appearances?
235.
That's locked in. John?
I was going to say 242. So, yeah, I'll stick with that.
Okay. Connor?
260.
And then yeah. John is the closest. Congratulations, 244. He was only two away.
Nice.
That was at the time of whenever that question was written, but it's the same for all teams.
can I just acknowledge as well that we completely forgot to do listener questions, Tom? So,
well, we talked.
Thank you for all those lovely questions.
Yeah. Well, do you want to do your favorite one now?
Oh yeah, go on then. And this is the one that is guaranteed to have won Along Come Norwich merch. It was the first one that we had in, and it's from Matthew McGregor, who always asks us a question. And he said, in retrospect, would you rather have had Frankie Dettori, i.e. Frank Lampard, as our manager?
Well, firstly, I genuinely thought he meant Frankie Dettori.
Let's just do both. Let's just reframe it and go, Connor, for Norwich's next manager, would you rather have Frank Lampard or Frankie Dettori?
You're probably Lampard, probably. and what I would say is I think that would have been, for maybe the wrong reasons or maybe the right reasons, more entertaining. But maybe some would argue that it couldn't have been any less entertaining. So, yeah, as like an observer, I think Frank Lampard at Norwich City and the juxtaposition there would have been quite interesting to watch.
Yeah.
But I don't think it'd have had a massive difference, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I think we'd be around about where we are now. Maddie, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with Connor. I think if we weren't Norwich fans, it would be absolutely hilarious because we would just be able to watch, you know, what's happening to Everton happen to us instead. Unfortunately, we are Norwich fans, so we would have had to live through it. So, God, I just remember the pain at that time thinking, these are our choices, Dean Smith and Frank Lampard, really? And everyone go, oh, no, one of them will be good. Well, maybe he would have been good, but for now, we're stuck with what we've got instead.
Yeah, I talked myself into Lampard. From to Connor's point, it's different. I mean, it would be a very newsworthy. It would be nice to be a newsworthy club from that point of view. But I don't know. I don't feel like I've got any sense of what Frank Lampard would bring Norwich besides the chaos that was at Everton. I mean, the one thing I am aware of is quite how much chaos there had been at Everton already that he was kind of inheriting, if you see what I mean. So I'm not really sure that you can 100%, I mean, I'm not saying I want Lampard to replace Smith now, but I'm not 100% sure that we as a footballing public definitely necessarily know what the Lampard experience would be like in a team that wasn't quite as much of a clown car as Everton were in terms of wasted money and disjointed squad and unhappy players and all the rest of it that he had to deal with there. But anyway, I hope we never know. I think it's probably safe to say that we'll never know.
Yeah. Almost certainly.
Thank you for your questions. I think we covered most of what was asked, which is effectively what on earth is going to happen and will there be a replacement? Connor, we thank you so much for your time. Maddie, appreciate you joining us this lunchtime. John, I acknowledge at Christmas that you exist more than ever. And
cheers, bro.
Enjoy whatever happens on Boxing Day. Let's hope that there is either a fantastic turnaround in the fortunes of the football that we play or a change of manager. Either would be a good result in my festive stocking. Right, there you go.